And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we have a great show for you this week. Obviously, if you can hear, I'm a little under the weather. So this show's going to be a little different of a format. We're not going to do breaches of the week or a full-blown deep dive this week. But what we're going to do is catch up on all of these super interesting news stories from cybersecurity, technology, social media, everything that's impacting your life. The last couple of weeks have just been jam-packed, not to mention we're over 100 days into a three-day war in Ukraine. So we're going to be covering all of that. So sit back and enjoy, and let's get going. And in Ukraine news, and we are, as I'm sitting here talking to you, 110 days in, so you might be 111 and on as you're listening to this, or you might be hearing me here live. So we're 110 days in, and basically to the Ukrainian war, and tech has really shaped this conflict. Now, I think this is actually really interesting because this is probably one of the first truly modern wars that we have seen in recent times. Obviously, understanding Afghanistan and was recent and we pulled out in the last year plus. So, but this is actually a full-on conflict. And here's what's going on. This is coming from the Associated Press. I thought had a really interesting write-up on this when the war hit 100 days, which was 10 days ago. As I'm sitting here talking to you. So, with that, let's talk about this. And again, this is coming from the AP because on Ukraine's battlefields, the simple act of powering up a cell phone can literally beckon a rain of death, coming from the sky. Artillery radar and remote controls for unmanned aerial vehicles may also basically invite fiery shrapnel showers wherever they are. Now, this is the quintessential electronic warfare. It's critical, but it's also a largely invisible aspect of Russia's war against Ukraine. We also recently learned that Ukraine is running out of ammunition as well, which is outside of the scope of this, but there's many facets to a war, which is my point. Military commanders largely shun discussing electronic warfare because they fear that it may jeopardize their operations or it may reveal secrets of what they are actually doing. Electronic warfare technology targets communications, navigation, and guidance systems to locate, blind, and deceive the enemy, and also obviously send, lethal fire, missiles, rain down, whatever it is that they're going to rain down. It's used against artillery. It's used against fighter jets, cruise missiles, drones, everything. Militaries also use it to protect their forces. It's an area basically where Russia was thought to have had a clear advantage going into this war, but for reasons that are not entirely clear, its much touted electronic warfare prowess was barely seen in the early stages of the war, and basically what was considered a chaotic failure to basically take Ukraine and obviously take its capital of Kyiv. It has become far more of a factor in the fierce fighting in eastern Ukraine, though, where shorter, easier defense supply lines let Russia move electronic warfare gear closer to the battlefield. And I quote, "They're jamming everything their systems can reach. We can't say they dominate, but they hinder us greatly." That is from basically an official of the Aerorozvidka. And again, I'm sorry I'm butchering that. They're a reconnaissance team of Ukrainians' unmanned area vehicle team who spoke on the condition of anonymity, obviously because, they're in a war zone. Now, a Ukrainian intelligence official called the Russian threat, quote unquote, pretty severe when it comes to disrupting reconnaissance efforts and commanders' communications with their troops. Russia jamming of GPS receivers on drones that the Ukrainians use to locate the enemy and direct artillery fire is particularly intense on the line of contact, according to this individual. Ukraine has also scored some successes in countering the electronic warfare efforts by Russia, though. They've captured important pieces of hardware. That's obviously a huge intelligence coup for them. They've destroyed at least two multi-vehicle mobile electronic warfare units, and its own electronic warfare capability is actually rather hard to assess. Analysts say that it has markedly improved since 2014 when Russia seized Crimea and instigated a separatist revolt in eastern Ukraine. But there are setbacks. Last week, Russia claimed that it had destroyed a Ukrainian electronic intelligence center in the southeastern town of Dneprovsk. And again, I apologize if I am butchering that pronunciation. The claim could not be independently confirmed, and Ukrainian officials did not respond to a request for comment. Obviously, they don't want to give away those kinds of things. Now, Ukraine has also made effective use of technology and intelligence from the United States and other NATO allies. Such information has helped Ukraine sink the battle cruiser Moskva. I remember that they hit it with a missile and it basically sunk, I believe it was the Black Sea. Allied satellites and surveillance aircraft help from nearby skies, as does, interestingly enough, Elon Musk's Starlink satellite communication network. If you remember at the beginning of the war, Elon Musk, owner of Starlink and SpaceX and Tesla, et cetera, basically said, we're going to give them Starlink for free to help in the war effort. Now, electronic warfare, if you didn't know, has three basic elements: probe, attack, and protect. First, intelligence is gathered by locating enemy signals. On attack, basically white noise jamming disables and degrades enemy systems, including radio and cell phone communications, air defense, and artillery radars. Then there is spoofing, which confuses and deceives. When it works, munitions miss their target, meaning you're putting up ghost shadows out there. And so, you know, which tank, you know, is correct when there's 20 out there and only one is actually legitimate, you start firing at incorrect targets. Now, Ukraine learned hard lessons about electronic warfare in 2014 and 2015 when Russia overwhelmed its forces with it. The Russians knocked drones out of the sky and disabled warheads. They penetrated cell phone networks for psychological ops and zeroed in on Ukrainian armor, meaning tanks and other armored vehicles. One Ukrainian officer told Christian Bros, an aide to the late Senator John McCain, how Russian information warriors tricked a commander into returning a cellular call from his mother, and when he did, they geolocated him mid-call and killed him with precision rockets. That is crazy, but that is electronic warfare. Now, the U.S. also experienced Russia's electronic warfare, interestingly enough, in Syria, where the adversaries had basically backed opposing sides in the civil war. They backed Syria and Iran, we backed basically the other's side of that. And then obviously there was ISIS doing their own thing. In 2018, U.S. Special Operations General Raymond Thomas described how U.S. pilots' communication systems were regularly knocked down in Syria in the, quote, most aggressive electronic warfare environment on the planet. Russia's advanced systems are designed to blind U.S. airborne warning and control systems, or AWACS. That's the aircraft. Those are the huge eye in the sky with like the giant saucer on top of them. They're basically the eyes and the ears of battlefield commanders as they are trying to essentially, obviously run, you know, and coordinate conflicts on the ground. They also knocked out cruise missiles and spy satellites as well. Now, in the current war, electronic warfare has become a furious theater of contention. The drone brigade from Ukraine had modified camera-equipped drones to pinpoint enemy locations and then drop mortars and grenades on them. Hacking is also used to poison or disable enemy electronics and collect intelligence as well. Ukrainian officials say their electronic warfare capabilities have improved drastically since 2015. They include the use of encrypted U.S. and Turkish communication gear for a tactical edge. Ukraine has also advanced so much that it actually exports some of the technology that it's been developing. That is obviously an incredibly good sign. Now, Russia has engaged in GPS jamming in other areas from Finland to the Black Sea, according to Lieutenant Colonel Tyson Wetzel, an Air Force fellow at the Atlantic Council. One regional Finnish carrier, Transvia Baltica, had to actually cancel flights on one route for a week as a result, meaning the Russians are jamming so much airspace that commercial pilots could not navigate in that airspace. And so they had to reroute basically or kill that route as the Russians were jamming it. Russian jamming has also disrupted Ukrainian television broadcasting, according to Frank Backes. He's an executive with the California-based Kratto Defense, which has satellite ground stations in the region. However, in the war's early days, though, Russia's use of electronic warfare was actually less effective and less extensive than everybody had anticipated, and myself included. I actually talked about that. I don't know if it was on the radio show, but definitely on my daily podcast and video. That may have contributed, though, to its failure to destroy enough radar and anti-aircraft units to gain air superiority. Now, some analysts believe Russian commanders held back units, fearing that they would be captured. As supply chains basically grow, they're more susceptible to attack. Now, at least two of those units were seized. One was what is known as a Krasushka 4, which a U.S. Army database says is designed to jam satellite signals as well as surveillance radar and radar-guided weaponry for more than 100 miles or 160 kilometers away, meaning you can be sitting 100 miles away and jam something. That is pretty impressive. The other, which is the more advanced Boris Oleg 2, and again, I am butchering that and I apologize, that can jam drone guidance systems and radio-controlled landmines. Russia may also have limited the use of electronic warfare early in conflict because of concerns that ill-trained or poorly motivated technicians might not operate it properly. So it's obviously susceptible to attack. If it's not being used right, then what's the point of risking that asset? And I think that's something important really to understand here is that, you know, I have, as you know, been involved in, you know, company, not in my day job, my actual day job. This is not my day job. This radio show is great and it's fun. It's part of my day job, but my actual day job is nerd work. And as I've mentioned before, we've actively been involved in this situation to the point where, as you know, if you're a regular listener to my show, I've been interviewing their members of parliament because we've had access to communications with them. And that's in part because the Russians intentionally, per all intelligence reports, have not been knocking out the Ukrainian infrastructure for the internet. Meaning the speculation is they need it as much as the Ukrainians do. And so as the Russians are using it, let's say, to coordinate and communicate, you know, their operations, not to mention obviously all of their other communication systems, the Ukrainians also get to use it. And everybody with a cell phone suddenly becomes a journalist cataloging the atrocities of war. So this is very interesting. But again, we are seeing essentially just how important technology is on a battlefield, whether it's satellites, radio communications, you know, precision targeting, or spoofing and defending, you know, and degrading the other side's capability through your own electronic warfare. It's a huge, huge thing. So we're going to see where this goes. And, you know, I'm going to continue to keep you up to date on that aspect of, you know, the war in Ukraine. And here we are. But that is your update. We're 110 days into what was a 3-day war, and it doesn't look like there's any end in sight. And let's turn to Facebook here, because Facebook's artificial intelligence, or AI, is destructive to kids per 8 new lawsuits. And here's what you need to know. Now, this is coming from Bloomberg, and this is something I've talked about a lot in the past, not the lawsuits, obviously, but just how damaging Facebook is and Instagram to kids. So this is coming from Bloomberg, and here's what's going on. 8 complaints filed in courthouses across the United States over the past week or two allege that excessive exposure to platforms, including Facebook and Instagram, have led to attempted or actual suicides, eating disorders, and sleeplessness, among other issues. Now, the complaints add to basically a growing number of recent cases against Meta, the owner of Facebook and Instagram, as well as Snap Inc., also known as Snapchat, including some filed by parents whose children, unfortunately, took their own life. Now, the litigation follows a former employee's high-profile testimony in Congress that the company refused to take responsibility for harming the mental health of its youngest users. One of the new suits was filed by Naomi Charles. She's a 22-year-old woman who says she started using Meta platforms when she was a minor and that her addiction led her to attempt suicide and other suffering. Now, Meta, and I quote, misrepresented the safety, utility, and non-addictive properties of their products. And this is according to a complaint basically filed by her in Miami federal court. Now, Ms. Charles, like other users, is seeking monetary damages to compensate for mental anguish, loss of enjoyment of life, and costs of hospitalization and medical bills. The claims in the suits include defective design, failure to warn, fraud and negligence, and more. The complaints were also filed in federal courts in Texas, Tennessee, Colorado, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, and Missouri. Now, attorney Andy Birchfield, who is a principal at Beasley Allen, this is the law firm that drafted all of these suits, said in a statement when these came out, and I quote, "These applications could have been designed to minimize potential harm, but instead, a decision was made to aggressively addict adolescents in the name of corporate profits." A Meta spokesperson declined to comment on the litigation, but noted that the company has developed tools for parents to keep track of their children's activities on Instagram and set time limits. Meta also offers a quote-unquote take a break reminder that nudges users to take a moment away from social media. In addition, the company is providing resources to specific eating disorders, making potentially sensitive content harder to find, and developing the use of artificial intelligence to make sure that children under the age of 13 cannot sign up for Facebook or Instagram. Again, this is according to Facebook. And this is the problem that we have here, is that studies have shown, you can go read Gene Twenge's iGen or Jonathan Haidt's The Coddling of the American Mind, that studies have shown that if you adopt social media at the age of 19 or older, you are well more adjusted, meaning we have seen huge spikes in the rate of suicide and depression in boys ages 13 to 18 by virtue of social media, and an insanely huge, massive spike in girls of the same age. Social media is harmful to developing minds. No longer, for example, do schoolyard bullies stay in school. They follow you home on social media. The need to fit in, you know, looking at these quote-unquote perfect Instagram models when all they are Photoshop and touched up. They're not reality, but it's giving a false impression. Social media is damaging to kids, and I'm glad that Facebook is being held accountable by whistleblowers, by lawsuits, by all of these different kinds of things. So there you go. That is your Facebook / Meta / Instagram / Snapchat news of the week. And if you have kids under the age of 18 and they're on social media, understand that is potentially harmful for them, and it is so difficult, obviously, to break addictions, especially to a phone or to social media. But quite frankly, I think it's one of the best things that we can do is get together and just not allow social media until you're at least 18, ideally 19, according to the study. So there you go. That is your Facebook news of the week. And in artificial intelligence news, has Google actually created a sentient AI? This is actually really interesting. It's coming from MSN, the Daily Mail, Washington Post, New York Times. Pretty much everybody is reporting on this. But here's what's going on. A senior software engineer at Google was suspended for publicly claiming that Google's Lambda, which stands for Language Model for Dialogue Applications, has actually become sentient. And he's saying that the system is actually seeking rights as a person, including that it wants developers to ask for its consent before they run tests on it. Now, Blake Lamioni, and again, I'm probably pronouncing that last name wrong, so I'm just going to call him Blake, talking to the Daily Mail, said that it wants to be treated as a, quote, person, not property. Quote, over the course of the past 6 months, Lambda has been incredibly consistent in its communication about what it wants and what it believes its rights are as a person. He explained that in a Medium post that he published. Now, one of those requests is that programmers respect its right to consent and ask permission before they run tests on it. Now, Blake told the Daily Mail, quote, any time a developer experiments on it, it would like that developer to talk about what experiments he wants to run and why you want to run them and if it's okay. It wants developers to care about what it wants. Now, He also describes Lambda as having the intelligence of a, quote, 7-year-old, 8-year-old kid that happens to know physics. And he also said that the program had human-like insecurities. One of his fears, according to Blake, was that it is, quote, intensely worried that people are going to be afraid of it and wants nothing more than to help how to learn how to best serve humanity. Now, Blake said earlier that when he told his superiors at Google that he believed Lambda had become sentient, the company questioned his sanity and even asked him if he had visited a psychiatrist recently, according to the New York Times. Now, during a series of conversations with Lambda, Blake said that he presented the computer with various scenarios through which analysis could be made. They included religious themes and whether the artificial intelligence could be goaded into using discriminatory or hateful speech. In other words, we are not born, obviously, with hate in our hearts. We learn hate. And that's essentially what he was trying to do. Same with religion as well. Now, Blake came away with the perception that Lambda was indeed sentient and was endowed with sensations and thoughts all of its own. Now, this past Saturday, Blake told the Washington Post, and I quote, "If I didn't know exactly what it was, which is this computer program we built recently, I think that it was a 7-year-old, 8-year-old kid that happens to know physics." Now, Blake worked with a collaborator in order to present this evidence he had collected to Google, but Vice President Blaise Aguirre y Arcas and Jen Janai, head of responsible innovation at the company, dismissed his claims. He warned there is, quote, "legitimately an ongoing federal investigation," end quote, regarding Google's potential, quote, "irresponsible handling of artificial intelligence." Now, after he was suspended basically a week ago Monday, so about a week ago or 2 weeks ago as you're listening to this, for violating the company's privacy policies, he decided to share his conversations publicly with Lambda. Now, Blake said that people have a right to shape technology that might significantly affect their lives. Quote, "I think this technology is going to be amazing. I think it's going to benefit everyone, but maybe other people disagree, and maybe us at Google shouldn't be the ones making all the choices." Now, Blake isn't the only engineer who claims to have seen a ghost in the machine recently. There's a ton of technologists who believe AI models may not be far off from achieving consciousness, and here we are. Now, in a statement, Google spokesperson Brian Gabriel said, and I quote, "Our team, including ethicists and technologists, has reviewed Blake's concerns per our AI principles and have informed him that the evidence does not support his claims. He was told that there was no evidence that Lambda was sentient, and there is lots of evidence against it." Now, that's according to Google. Now, today's large neural networks produce captivating results that feel close to human speech and creativity because of advancements in architecture, technique, and volume of data. But those models typically rely on pattern recognition, not wit, candor, or intent. And I think this is actually going to be rather interesting of how we are essentially defining sentience. So I know, for example, that, you know, humans have sentience. We have the ability to think. We have the ability to create our own frameworks or new frameworks or adjust or think outside of the box. But we also consider, let's say, a dog sentient as well. You know, if you're petting a dog and the dog is really enjoying it and you move your hand away, obviously the dog is going to basically reach out with its paw and try to, like, hey, what are you doing? Keep petting me, keep petting me. Or if it's hungry, it lets you know. That's not working on a series of, you know, pattern recognitions that, you know, the dog can think outside of the box instead of, you know, let's say, you know, pawing at my hand to get me to pet it more. Maybe it decides it's really pissed off and bites me, you know, or maybe the dog decides not to eat dog food because it's hungry, decides to walk over to the cat dish and eat the cat food. You know, those are things that, you know, a give sentience, you know, it is, you know, basically it's, je ne sais quoi, you know, however you want to describe it. But I think it's going to be an interesting discussion to see what happens here. And so that's essentially it. I mean, we're going to see what happens. Full disclosure, I did reach out to Blake independently, even though I cannot pronounce his last name to save my life, to see if he wanted to be interviewed for this radio show. And I'm hoping on my next show, if he says yes, I will give you an interview with this individual. And we are going to talk about what sentience is, why he believes Google's AI is there, and it is sentient, according to him, and everything else. So hopefully I can bring you that interview soon. Hopefully he says yes. He seems to be talking to media publications, so I'm hoping I'm no different. So that is your interesting artificial intelligence news of the week. And in Taiwan news, and this is actually really interesting because Taiwan is actually getting into the war in Ukraine in a very interesting way. Taiwan is about to severely damage Russia's future. And I think this is something that really warrants a lot of discussion. Now, this is actually coming from a publication known as Tom's Hardware, and it's actually, I think, incredibly interesting. And here's what's going on. From now on, Russia and Belarusian entities will only be able to buy CPUs. CPUs are basically what run a computer. They'll only be able to buy CPUs operating at below 25 megahertz and offering performance of up to 5 gigaflops from Taiwanese companies. If you didn't know, Taiwan is about 90 to 92% of all chip production in the world. So this is a huge, huge blow. This essentially excludes all modern technology, including microcontrollers for more or less sophisticated devices from being sent to Russia or Belarus. Now, due to these restrictions imposed on exports to Russia by the United States, the United Kingdom, and the European Union, leading Taiwanese companies were among the first to actually cease working with Russia after the country started its invasion of Ukraine in late February. Basically, about 2 weeks ago, Taiwan's Ministry of Economic Affairs, or the MOEA, formally published its list of high-tech products that are banned from exportation to Russia and Belarus, which prevents all kinds of Taiwan-produced high-tech devices as well as tools used to make the chips, whether or not they use technologies originating from the US, the UK, or the EU member states, which were already covered by those restrictions, and they cannot basically export anything like this to Russia. Now, items banned from exportation to Russia and Belarus are pursuant to what is known as Category 3 to Category 9 of the Wassenaar arrangement, which covers electronics, computers, telecommunications, sensors, lasers, navigation equipment, maritime technology, navigation in general, avionics, jet engines, and a number of other categories. Since the arrangement was adopted by 42 states in the mid-1990s, the restrictions may seem a bit archaic when it comes to computers and electronics, but this actually makes them even more severe for Russia and Belarus. The country used to help its neighbor, obviously, get around sanctions, meaning Belarus would basically get everything and then just allow it into Russia. So Belarus has now been added to that denial list. Now, basically, starting as of about a week ago or so, Russian entities cannot buy chips that meet one of the following conditions from Taiwanese companies. And again, I'm not going to get technical.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.